CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
And I'm Brian Kaufman, producing here today. I'd like to thank our sponsors first, Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, National Association of Corporate Directors, an association created for directors by directors, whose mission is to advance exemplary board leadership. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And today we're going to have a brief news article before we get into talking with our guest. CFO Radio News is today published by chiefexecutive.net. And it's a CEO briefing newsletter that describes the four keys to successfully managing your management team. And this was published March 29th. The composition of the so-called C-suite has changed over the past 20 years, according to HBR writer Gary L. Nielsen. In his work as a consultant, he's seen what works to make the way CEOs interact with their management team be successful and also what causes failure. He goes on to say that key points that enable a management team to succeed include making sure collaboration and honesty are critical elements of how C-suite members work together and communicate, keeping conversations focused on supporting the operating model and the processes that reinforce it are also paramount. Here are the four keys to successfully managing your management team. 1. Listen to the right voices. You can do this by making sure that the person fits the role, not that the role fits the person. The strategy has to be driven forward by people with the proper know-how, not by people who simply have a voice. 2. Reset the rules of the game. And we've heard this previously, but what does it mean in this context? All members of the C-suite have to be focused on overall company performance, not just their individual business unit or area. Tie compensation to overall performance, not just silo performance. 3. Stop being the decider in chief. CEOs too often make it their job to decide all strategic and operational issues. Take yourself out of the majority of all decisions where another member of the management team can be the decider. And 4th and final, be prepared to declare amnesty for the past. You don't want your management team constantly defending their course of action and past decisions. Focus on the future, not on the past. If something didn't work, don't force your direct reports to defend it. The past is the past, and you must only focus on the future and accomplishing your business goals. Well, today I'm very pleased to have Terry Suttles as our guest. He's Senior Partner of Value Sourcing Group, LLC, and as a co-founder of his own consulting firm, Terry is a seasoned and acknowledged expert in contract negotiations, RFP development and execution, and benchmarking services. His experience includes over 14 years of working with Fortune 1000 clients in negotiating best-in-class telecommunications contracts. He's also well-versed in marketing, technology design, network engineering, project management, strategical and tactical planning, staffing and recruitment, and application development. As former vice president with ProfitLine and with Meta Group's Enterprise Strategies Group, Terry has more than 2 decades of experience in telecommunications sourcing and procurement, and in addition to his consulting, he was instrumental in negotiating the 1996 Olympic Games sponsorship for AT&T, and then subsequently served as program management for the Atlanta Committee for the Olympic Games, ACOG. He was responsible for more than $120 million of IT services and products that delivered the voice, data and video support services to the data center, help desks, voice and video networks, all for the 1996 Olympic Games. From 1992 to 96, Terry was the director of strategic planning for ATT Network Systems in Atlanta, Georgia, providing leadership for its IT strategic planning functions. Terry Suttles majored in business administration at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he's completed the business strategy and computer architecture program at the Cambridge Institute, a partnership between MIT and Harvard University as part of their executive management programs at MIT. Well, my goodness, Terry, that's quite an introduction. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lorraine. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Terry, let's start at the beginning. We start with a fun question. What was your first job, whether it was picking apples off the tree and selling them, a lemonade stand, or washing cars for neighbors? What was your first job?
Well, I think like a lot of people, I guess when I was about 15 years old, I had a paper route, and it was a morning paper route. And interestingly enough, I had to ride my bike about 5 miles to get from my house to where the route was. And it was an interesting time, and certainly I think I learned a lot of lessons about having to go 5 miles just to get to where I needed to start to work. So
yeah, so was that a lesson in life you've carried on?
Possibly. You know, there's probably a lot of intrinsic value that I've derived from that experience, but
yeah,
you oftentimes don't know. But
yeah. So how did you get from paper route to today with a lot of experience in telecommunications?
Wow. When I graduated from high school, I started attending VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University. And like many people from that era, I got caught up in the Vietnam saga, if you will. And I dropped out of college after about a year and got drafted. And I got the privilege of serving my country for several years, which is another long story. Probably take about an hour and a half just to talk about that. So once I came back, I went to work for the Bell Operating Company, Chesapeake and Potomac Telephone Company in Virginia, and started going to night school. And from there, I rose up and got into marketing and sales and a number of different programs. And it's interesting, about every year or 2 years, I would change functions. And that's really what led to a lot of what you read about on my bio, from technology operations to network design, ran a test center for a while. I did technology support, I've had a sales position within the company. I had sales management positions, and then finally got into marketing. And so in 1981, when AT&T divested the operating companies, I actually went with AT&T Information Systems and worked with them for about a year. And that led to a staff position, which eventually led to me being transferred. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. There was a Center for Executive Education at Callaway Gardens here in Georgia. And I was an executive briefer there for about a year. And I took up golf, and we flew executives in from all over the country and talked to them about the integration of voice and data. And this was mid-1980s. From there, I went into the director position and started negotiating enterprise agreements with clients to buy central office systems. And I was fortunate enough to be on the team that negotiated the Olympic sponsorship. And that negotiation, Lorraine, really led me to to believe pretty firmly that there was a lot of opportunity on the buy side that wasn't being captured. During that negotiations, which was a $40 million agreement ultimately, it became clear to me that there was some opportunity there. So after that agreement was made, I decided to go to work for the Olympic Organizing Committee. They offered me a position, and I thought that would be an opportunity of a lifetime. So I really enjoyed working, you know, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. It was quite fun. And I learned a lot. In enterprise, we interface with over 170 different countries, and my job was to work with each one of them in the technology sector and to help meet their requirements for the games. So it was a little bit stressful.
And there's no second run at that. If the telecommunications don't go live, then the rest of the world doesn't hear about the games, huh?
Well, it's interesting. It's the only position I've ever had where the due date was, you couldn't change it. You know, they were going to go live with the games on that date. Like it or not, and so we were able to make that happen. After the games were over, I took some time off, and a friend of mine that I had met during the games had formed a small group of about 7 or 8 people and formed a consulting firm, and he offered me a position with that group, and so I took it. I got involved with developing what we call buy-sell dynamics. You know, how do you manage the relationship if you're a purchaser of technology, which is certainly your audience? How do you manage those relationships with the suppliers to make sure you extract the most value, mm-hmm. you know, the best price points, mm-hmm. but also the relationship itself? And there's a lot of issues around that. So the people who I joined up with were Price Waterhouse folks who had developed over a 10-year period, a methodology for determining and working with buy-sell relationships. And so I incorporated that into my experience with telecommunications and actually did some consulting in that space with some big outsourcing deals, et cetera. I was with them about a year, and we got purchased by another company called Century Technology Group, which is a larger group, doing the same type of work, and again, but just bigger. A year later, we got purchased by Meta Group. And Meta Group was a research firm that the lead analyst for Gartner, which I'm sure most of our listeners know who Gartner is, he left Gartner and created a competitive company called Meta Group, which was basically a research company. They did a lot of IT research, and clients would sign up to annual subscriptions, and then those clients would then have access to the consultant or the analyst within the company, advising them on things like procurement and technology and a lot of the issues that most enterprise clients are interested in. So Meta Group decided that they wanted to do something rather unique. They wanted to apply that research in a real way. So not only tell people what they should and could do and how to do it, but actually show them and do it for them. So when they purchased our group, it was about 33 consultants involved. That's what we did. We went in and started applying that research and using that information in a meaningful way to assist clients to achieve their objectives, which was pretty interesting. They had about virtually all Fortune 1000 clients worldwide as clients, and so it was a pretty interesting assignment. And working with them, I learned quite a lot. And then I actually created a sourcing practice within Meta Group for telecommunications to help deliver some of that research.
And that's perhaps brought you where you are today with value outsourcing.
Yes, because I actually left Meta Group, took some time off, decided that time off wasn't what I wanted, although it certainly was appealing when I looked at it initially. But and then I went to work for another small firm for a couple of years and decided to start my own company, using all the experience that I gained throughout this activity.
So today you're advising and helping companies and CFOs, those of our guests that are listeners and those that are guests that are on the show, you're helping them essentially look at the contracts that they have with regard to voice data communications and helping them save money. So perhaps let's start at the beginning. How does a CFO or a manager of those operational costs, how do they know even if what they're facing is a good deal or if what they have today is a good deal? How do you know that?
That's a really good question, Lorraine, because I think they don't. You know, a lot of times they have different resources like Gartner or research firms, or they have their own experience or the people within their staff. But I think a typical CFO has a lot of IT, information technology, procurement issues, telecom just being one. So in most cases, there's a lot of value in engaging a company like myself or to help them figure out, you know, what it is they're buying, you know, what's the price point that the market has available today, you know, how close or what is the gap between their price and what's being offered. But not just pricing, but also terms and conditions. There are many different issues in a contract with telecom that have economic impact. And the carriers tend to do a really good job of not disclosing that readily. So a lot of CFOs, you know, through networking or working with other CFOs or, you know, even talking to the guy in the plane seat next to him, they come to believe certain things are true. But what we do is we are help clarify and help them understand. It's not uncommon for Fortune 1000 clients to seek outside help to get that information to help them understand.
It's such a technical area that a CFO couldn't, unless he or she came through very highly technical ranks such as yourself, which isn't likely, probably isn't going to have the skill set. But also, as you were talking there, Terry, one of the aspects that I'm thinking is, how do you even know what you need? I mean, from a perspective of a CFO wanting to maintain appropriate cost structure, there's one component of that of getting the good, the right rate for the services that you're purchasing. But there's a precursor to that in terms of making sure that the services that you're being provided and asking for are actually those that you need, not that they're too great and that you're paying for services that you're not using, and certainly that they're not strong enough to be able to provide you the services. You can't have outages, you can't have people in the call center, you know, clients, customers calling in and not being able to get a hold of you. So how do you help determine from the outset what services a company needs before you go down that rating, pricing, structure, terms and conditions path? Do you do a survey or a review of current versus future needs?
Well, the methodology that we use involves once we're engaged with a client, we collect all the information, the contracts, the billing information, everything that will give us the information we need to create what we call an inventory or a book of business. But then we go on site with the client and we sit down and do a workshop. And the workshop might be a half a day or longer, but it's a critical component because there are key stakeholders within an organization. There's technology, there's procurement, there's sourcing. There's IT. There's a number of different people within an organization, and they all have a vested interest in what's being done. The primary issue with essentially all telecom contracts is reliability. Am I getting what I'm paying for? But more importantly, is it, I don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize my business because the business is the key issue. So understanding.
And today, with so much of the business being in the cloud, it's absolutely crucial.
Exactly, because technology is changing so rapidly. Price points change rapidly. The carriers are somewhat they tend to mislead because they're pushing their solution, whether it's the best solution for you or not. And sometimes it's difficult to figure out if in fact that is the best solution for you. How does it impact your business? Technology can also be an enabler. It can help you produce more business, which is another element that when we do the workshop, we get into not only what you have and how much do you have and what you're paying and what are the terms and conditions and how much are you committing and, how long a contract. Those are fundamental issues. But more importantly is are you picking the right provider that can not only provide the services you need today, but in the future as the technology evolves, can they keep up with it? And can they be consultative in the sense of helping you as a buyer of services, figure out how to move forward and to best use their services without overselling you, which is, I think, one of the major issues. The way carriers operate, having been with AT&T for such a long time, I have a pretty good understanding of how they operate financially, and virtually all the primary carriers have a goal of growing their business. And it's interesting, Lorraine, because of the last 10, 15 years, the cost of providing the service has come down around anywhere from 11 to 12% per year. And so in the face of a client who's they're renegotiating the contract, they were spending $1 million, now they're spending $900,000, but my goal is $1.2 million, and I'll just use those numbers as averages. How do I get that, close that gap of $300,000? And it's pretty complicated. It takes a lot of understanding and a fair amount of work to really make sure that you're aware of all these things and how they impact your business.
Well, that being said, what does a really good telecom system look like? What are the components? Maybe start with the basics for us.
Well, a telecom contract basically has two primary issues. It's the term. How long is the contract for? And what is the commitment that you're making to the provider of the service? Those are the two primary issues. If you what we advise clients is to make the term as short as possible, nothing more than 2 years. And I've seen 10-year agreements, which are just unbelievable. And the other thing is, what is the anticipated spend that you're willing to commit to? Because with telecom contracts, if you commit to it, if you don't spend it, you spend it anyway, which is sort of an interesting...
Wasted money.
Exactly. And it's amazing how many clients...
We CFOs, we hate that.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how many contracts I've seen where the buyer's upside down, similar to the housing market today. You know, you've committed $10 million a year. Your run rate's six, and you have a $4 million gap.
What do you do if that happens?
Well, hopefully you call me, but... You negotiate a solution, but what's happened then is the leverage goes to the seller, and then in the telecom world, it's all about leverage, right? And so if at that point the seller has you sort of over the barrel, the normal strategy, they'll come in and say, well, you know, there's a $4 million gap or $1 million gap or whatever it is, and contractually you owe us that money, but if you buy these other $1 million worth of services from us, whether you need them or not, we'll relieve you of that. And so it's pretty common, especially in the economic downturn. What's happened is a lot of businesses laid off, they've closed down buildings, they've gone to remote working, you know, they don't have as many office spaces, so their infrastructure requirements have gone down dramatically. You need to be able to, when you're negotiating a contract, understand that and project on it and make sure the language in the contract protects you against that. Most contracts don't, but if you do, you're lucky, then you get an adjustment in your commitment. The other thing is wireless. You know, wireless communications or mobile communications is really changing the face of how we provide services to enterprise clients today. And it's getting ready to have some, I think in the next year or two, some major impact. So you have a commitment with the non-wireless services, but the wireless services start taking some of that usage away. So it's a combination of those two factors. So it's what I call the gotchas. You know, how do you protect against the gotchas? How do you anticipate the gotchas? And so that's pretty much, I think, hopefully answered your question.
Yeah. And, you know, from a hands-on level, from an employee, as I look at telecommunications, maybe 3-5 years ago, executives might have been the ones to have had, and I don't want to necessarily name brand names, but it's tough to talk about these things without whether you have a BlackBerry or some other kind of smartphone. You know, the iPhone is out there, and there are so many competitors from Samsung and so forth. But you have a phone that basically can gain your email, you can gain internet access, and so many professionals today just have that as standard. What I see and have seen in the last 18 months is that the average staff member and employee has the wherewithal, technology savvy, to be able to go download their company email onto their personal communications device. Right. That essentially, at this point in time, the company doesn't necessarily have the capability to prevent, albeit that they might try. And now they're in a position where sometimes that telecommunications control is now in the hands of the employee rather than the telecommunications department.
Yeah, mobile communications has created a tremendous number of new challenges for organizations. A lot of new organizations are creating a mobility similar to, I guess, a chief mobility officer. It's a new title that's just recently come about. Most enterprise clients are, when they meet with the board of directors, they're being asked because it's so visible. Everybody knows about it. It's all over the place. So the question is, what are we doing? How are we using mobility to be more successful? How are we controlling it? Because there's control, there's expense management. How do you control the cost because it's escalating at a very high rate? You know, how do we do security? There's companies doing what's called mobile device management. There's inventory issues. There's ownership issues. Some companies buy what's called corporate liable. The company provides the device and gives it to you, but they control it, and they control what goes on and off of it and security and so forth. Others don't. Others pay. They reimburse you.
So they'll give you X $100 for you to go get your own phone, and you choose what you want.
Right, and then monthly you turn in an expense report. Sure. And there's everything in between. There's combinations thereof.
So many times I've seen that the large corporations have a deal with, you know, one of the big carriers, and I won't name names, but that the carrier deal is perhaps twice the price of what the individual could go get in on their own.
We hear that a lot, Lorraine, because but the elements that you're looking at relative to cost are the highly visible ones. And in a corporate deal that's been negotiated, a highly competitive corporate deal, there are probably 10 other things that are price points that you don't know anything about, because the average consumer doesn't understand some of the price components in a corporate world. And if you negotiate a good corporate agreement, not only are you getting discounts and et cetera on the corporate liable devices, but you also, the individual liable, they can sign them up under their corporate name. So if your family, you have four people in your family and the other three you want to sign up, they can get an additional discount. But then the consumer side of the mobile communications enterprises offer these special deals. And that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
So you see these one-offs and you go, wait a minute, I'm paying more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are 10 other things that you're not paying
that you're
more
not
for.
Seeing.
Right.
I see.
But I a lot of CFOs are call me and say exactly what you just said. Why am I paying, you know, more on my corporate deal than I can walk in the store and get?
Right. So $69 unlimited personally, yeah. And I'm paying $129 through the corporation.
Yeah, it's the visibility of it's pretty impressive. But if you have a good enterprise management company managing your mobile communications, they're quickly able to answer the question. But it is something that's very visible.
Well, talking of wireless and mobility, unlimited data, what are the risks to that?
You know, Lorraine, that's in my mind, that's one of the biggest concerns I would have if I was a CFO, because there are a lot of companies out there that do nothing but develop applications in ways to consume bandwidth and to use more data. The iPhone's a good example. I'm not sure I'm supposed to say iPhone, but I'll say it anyway.
Well, let's say another two or three just so that we're not bashing.
Okay. BlackBerry.
Yes.
To do the same amount of email on a BlackBerry versus an iPhone, the iPhone uses about 10 times as much data. And so the amount of data going back and forth between devices changes depending on whose device it is and what applications are running on it. So you have the world trying to get people to use more data. And the carriers' networks are not capable of handling that data. There's a major problem that the carriers have.
And from time to time, the carriers have a total outage. You know, you do hear from time to time, and again, I'm not going to name names, but X was out for half a day, and oh my gosh.
Right. So their network has a certain amount of capacity, because virtually all networks are not designed for maximum usage. There's some algorithms and engineering so that the network design and the capacity is based on averages, not everybody using it at once. So what happens is that in North America, the contracts typically had a fixed amount of money pre-discounted for a data plan, and you could use all you want, just drink all you want kind of deal. Outside the U.S., there is no such thing as unlimited data. And so if you have people who are leaving this country to go, you run into issues where I talked to a client on Tuesday who had gotten an air card, which plugs into your laptop, got it when they got into, I think it was Ukraine is where they were, plugged it into their laptop, got a bill for $55,000. And, you know, so the CFO said, you know, we should have, we should have systems in place to prevent that. And the truth of the matter is, it's a very long answer as to why that happened. But it happens, and there are a lot of smaller ones where it's 2 or 3,000 or 500 or 800, and it doesn't even get noticed.
So okay, and for those of listeners that really can't see the facial, that we're not on video, my jaw just dropped, and I'm quite shocked. How does that play out? $55,000, which the poor guy probably, his bill was maybe $100 a month or something, and maybe he thought he was reading something that was just Disneyland.
Well, it was alarming, to say the least, right? So the enterprise client is a client of mine, and so they called me and said, you know, this is crazy. And so, you know, the carriers have systems that notify you when you exceed a certain level, like if you exceed 2,000 or 4,000 or whatever criteria you establish.
But maybe that was that control was ignored in this instance?
No, they contacted the user, and the user was out of the country.
Oh, so.
So someone in North America said, well, they're out of the country, so it's probably okay. And they okayed it. And so they got an okay. What ultimately happened was they went and negotiated a solution, and they got the bill down considerably. Not all the way down, but considerably. And that's just one ad hoc story, but there are many of those that happen. So as an enterprise provider of mobility services, there is a potential to have exorbitant cost, even though you have controls in place. It's a big issue. But the bigger issue is that unlimited data that's available today is going to go away. The carriers will ultimately start charging as you drink, you know, 2 gig, 3 gig, 4 gig, whatever the limits are. And they already do that. You can buy different plans. And if you go buy a data plan, you buy it anticipating you're going to use a certain amount of data. But I hope you're right. Because if you exceed it, then there's a pretty exorbitant cost, which is typical of the carriers for quite some time. You know, if you buy 1,000 minutes and you use 1,001, that 1 minute can cost you 25 to 45 cents per minute, as opposed to a nickel a minute for minutes in the plan. So there's a lot of issues like that that I think CFOs need to be aware of.
Well, that being said, let's name some of the big names. We've got AT&T, we've got Verizon out there. And clearly, obviously, several others. But when we look at the wireless versus the wireline, how has this changed from a corporation and an enterprise-wide view? Talk through us about some of those recent changes.
Well, I think the cost for wireless, as I mentioned earlier, has gone up. And the issues around how to control it and manage it, and because it changes so regularly. One of the interesting dynamics about mobility, all the carriers, the AT&T, the Verizons, the Sprints, the T-Mobiles, they change their plans constantly, and no two plans look alike.
It's tough to keep up with from a personal level, so I can only imagine the CFO that's trying to manage this through a procurement function.
Yeah, I have a client in New York that has 35,000 devices that they manage every month. And there are ways to go in periodically every month or 2 months and optimize the usage. There are things you can do constructively, but I think the biggest issue is security. There's security risk around having mobile communications because now you have corporate data that's out there. You got to make sure that you have systems in place to keep people from getting it, especially if you're like a financial firm or anybody who has data you want to be secure. In the wireless world, it's a lot easier to get into that information and tap into it and steal it, if you will.
From a hacking perspective.
Oh, absolutely. So there are things you can do, but you need to stay on top of it because the people trying to get it are constantly getting better at it. And so I think the security, that's something that the corporations didn't have to worry about before. There's the increase in cost on the budget line because most CFOs are looking to reduce costs. And here they have a wireless, but budget just keeps going up or costs go up. And they don't necessarily have what I call visibility and control. Without a database with these 35,000 devices reside or 10,000 or even 2 or 3,000 and some meaningful information and ability to manipulate that data, you really don't have visibility into where the money's going. Why is it going up? Is it going up because you're traveling more? Is it going up because people are adding, buying stuff they shouldn't be buying? There's a whole host of things that could be taking place. So what I say to every client is you need to have visibility, which allows you to have better control. And then
one of the big challenges that I find companies have with small devices is it's very, very hard to track that. From an asset system perspective, very often these small devices are too small or too low in value to be tracked on a fixed asset system. And, I mean, laptops are almost getting low cost enough such that they're beginning to fall, if not have fallen, into that category. You can get some pretty decent laptops for less than $1,000. Mm-hmm. And most corporations, their capital policy, you don't start tracking those kind of equipment and technology in maybe $1,000, $2,000, some companies $5,000. So all these devices are floating out there. How do they track them? How do they know them? Let alone how do they get to the data?
Yeah. It's an issue because, I mean, when people leave the company and they have this device, what do they do with it? They throw it in the drawer? Do they give it to someone? Does it get mailed in to be recycled?
Or do they keep it?
Or do they keep it? And then the data has to be wiped. So whatever's on the device, all the information, personal information, contacts, business contacts, email information, you really don't want that to be out in the public domain. So it's a primary issue. And it's something that clients and companies didn't have to worry about just a few years ago. We're sort of on the edge of something that a lot of people don't know, Lorraine, and that is mobile devices have been used the same way non-mobile devices have been used, i.e. you have a laptop and you get emails, right? And you send emails. You can access the internet through that laptop. Well, you can do the same thing through a mobile device, right? So now you're just able to have more mobility. There are a lot of applications, thanks to Stephen Jobs, who I think was a terrifically intelligent man who understood things that most of us don't understand. There's the next generation, what's coming down the road, is going to change that. Because right now, it's just a replacement of the device that you use on your desk. But in the very near future, you're going to start seeing some applications developed that enable business decisions. So today you get an email on your smart device or your iPad or whatever it is, and you email back. There are some technologies that are very close to being available that are going to enable you to get the information, and then by touching the screen through that technology, act on that information rather than just create another email and send it back and forth in a very specific way, depending on what you're trying to do. And that's just really getting ready to explode. Most applications that are developed on mobile devices are what I call standalone applications. They're very specific. You can play chess. You can get travel information. You can go to an airline website. There's all these things you can do. But what's going to happen is you're going to start networking those devices to databases that connect to other databases so that you have do things like verification. So you mentioned inventory. Once that technology is available, you automatically, when you turn your device on, there'll be a signal sent to the device. It'll register the device. It'll send a signal back. Periodically, it'll check, are you still there? Have you left? There are things you can do in the software to enable that. There are specific information that you may want routinely you'll get, and you'll be able to act on immediately. I call it actionable information. And I'm involved working with a couple of different enterprises that are working on this type of software capability. And it's pretty exciting because it's going to change how enterprises use mobile communications. I'll give you a good example. There was a conference a few months ago, and AT&T gave all their executives iPads and told them to leave their laptops at home. And one of the executives got an email about an HR issue, and so she turned her iPad off and got on the phone, called someone who got into a database, got information, and took care of the HR issue. In the future, she'll be able to get all the information she wants and on that screen, decide what she wants to do, enable some action, and execute those actions, and never leave the device. Right now, the device is just, it's a replacement for typically a laptop in this case. But, so that's pretty exciting. From a contract perspective, it's going to be even more exciting because now how do you construct your contracts so that you have the old technology, now you're moving to the new technology and you have commitments, and so how do you fold all that in? So there's a lot going on in the technology. Virtually every engagement I do today, we have a lot of issues that we deal with around that and helping our clients understand and prepare for that, what I call certain uncertainty.
Certain uncertainty. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, what is the, when we look at technology and how it impacts our business, we can't today have a business without significant technology and the communication around that. But how does that impact our total cost of ownership from a contractual perspective?
Well, I think it has the potential to reduce your total cost of ownership because all the infrastructure that's required for the non-mobile communications is still there. And so if I'm a CFO and I'm looking at my corporate requirements, What I've done is I still have all that infrastructure, and I'm still paying for all that infrastructure. The usage may be going down or even going up in some cases, depending on what I'm doing. But the mobile communications costs are going up, so my total cost of ownership is increasing. Once I realize that I can replace some of that infrastructure with mobile communication services and no longer have that infrastructure, the work at home is a good situation. I have a lot of clients, and you go into their businesses, and they're empty spaces. There's all this infrastructure there. The cabling's there. The wiring's there. You know, the PBX systems are there. But, you know, you don't really need any of that anymore, because I can go in there with my mobile devices, and I don't need to connect to anything in that office. I don't need any office infrastructure.
You know, something that I find interesting from a finance expense management perspective, you look at the signature on people's emails, and there may be three or four phone numbers. There's the main office number, which presumably there's a receptionist or some kind of a voicemail system. Mm-hmm. Then there's the direct dial number, and then there's the cell phone number. And for me personally, in my business, I give out one number. It's not confusing. Well, what number should I use to call you on? There is one number.
Exactly.
And very often from a communication standpoint, you might now have to dial two or three numbers to get a hold of the person, where it's almost as if we've gone to the spider's web of confusion now, because we have so many sources at our hands.
Yeah. Companies like Google has a service where you might have four different telephone numbers, and no matter which one you dial, it goes to your cell phone.
From the user perspective, mm-hmm. that communication connectivity occurs mm-hmm. without my knowing. But mm-hmm. the frustration is when you've got to call two, three, four numbers to be able to reach the person. And sometimes you're leaving three voicemails on different devices. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a client that I spoke to last week, and I said to her, we were talking about effectiveness and efficiency in terms of her work as a CEO. And one of the things that she said is, I hate voicemail. And I said to her, well, I called you the other day, and your voicemail's full, by the way, so you need to clear it. And by the way, it's full on your office, but it's also full on your cell phone.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what? I just like email.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have, at this point in time, I think, so much technology that it's actually a challenge. And I think that there is almost a subculture within and the usage of how we use communication, that we copy everybody. You know, I remember 15, 20 years ago that it was a big deal to get the CC list for a memo before you had the typist type it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you copied 8, 20, 100 people without even thinking about it. And I personally would like to go ask Microsoft and all those other developers to remove Reply All, because it's so inefficient and ineffective from a communication perspective. And you think of the number of issues that occur in a workplace just through that Reply All.
Yeah, because it speaks to another issue, and that the technology enables a lot of information to be sent and received, as you referenced. But we get overwhelmed by it. Now it becomes, you know, I get CC'd on 10 email trails. And so I get insensitized, and I don't necessarily read it.
And it's difficult to know what's urgent and what needs your attention.
Yeah. If everything's urgent, nothing's urgent. Right,
right, exactly.
Exactly. So that's a challenge from a end-user perspective. I think that new technology, when you can act on it as opposed to just read it and then CC or forward it to someone else, but actually actionable information will change that a little bit, because then it won't be just, you know, building up chains of emails where everybody's getting copied. Next thing you know, you've got 200 people being on the distribution list. It's crazy. It's insane. One of the big challenges I have personally is I get so many emails. How do you get through them all? How do you read them all? And give them each the attention they deserve.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the promise of mobile communications? What is that promise to us as a CFO in business from an enterprise perspective?
Business process. I think if you look at business process and the transformation of business processing, it has a lot of opportunity to reduce infrastructure costs. And we referenced that a minute ago. But the real big opportunity, I think, is to find ways to use that technology to increase business, to drive new revenue. because, you know, real-time actionable information can impact the business on how you make decisions, how quickly you respond to issues, how quickly you might do things that result in improving your business and your bottom line. The client I have in New York, they deployed an application on their mobile devices, I guess about 2 years ago. And they're a financial firm, actually a conglomerate of financial firms. And their revenues went up 12%. Now, they can't prove that what they this application, which is pretty well-known application, that they put on their mobile devices, but it had to do with sales and tracking sales and reporting sales. And they can't definitively prove that 12% increased revenue was because of the mobile application, but they believe it's true. So
essentially, if you have people that are traveling, and sales task force very often are, mm-hmm. then if you can have the technology to perform the job function that they perform in their hand, mm-hmm. rather than waiting till they get to Starbucks or the hotel mm-hmm. or the office or the home mm-hmm. Or the customer that they're going to visit, mm-hmm. you've created more productivity in a day.
Yeah, but the difference being today you get an email, right? And then when you get where you're going, you log onto a system. And in the system, you do something, right, that's required. In the future, you'll get that notification, and I won't even call it an email. And then you'll act on it right there.
Right there and then on your mobile device.
And it's gone.
Hopefully not while you're driving.
Yeah. I talked to an AT&T executive a few months ago, and I suggested to him that he could get he gets periodic information about business on a like a weekly basis. And then when he gets it, he has to act. He has to do some things. There are 9 different things he has to do. I said, wouldn't it be nice if you could do those things right there on the spot? He said, he actually started, you know, he got kind of excited. He said, that would be unbelievably helpful to me because now I get the information. I got to go somewhere else. I got to get somebody else involved to execute on the information. If I could just touch the screen,
do it right there,
and it's there. The technology exists today; it's just not quite mainstream.
Interestingly, you talked about earlier in your career being in the armed forces, and so much of what we get today in terms of communication has come from the pioneers that also include the armed forces for purposes of security from a people and country. Are there new technologies that are coming down that perhaps have been in those armed forces that are just now becoming to the masses? Have they been using them for a decade and we're just now learning about them?
You know, I don't really have any personal knowledge about that, but I would assume that's the case because some of the things that the military does today from probing into and chasing the Al-Qaeda. There's some really cool stuff I'm sure that they're developing that's very secretive that works its way to the commercial market, to the commercial sector. So I don't know that for sure, but I can assume that.
Yeah, and today's police force has a mobile device in their car. They, you know, they drive up behind you and put your plate in the system, and right there and then you don't even need your insurance documents today,
right.
Do you?
No, and your record pops up on the screen. I mean,
right.
you're pretty much in trouble.
You're right. Before they even get out of the car, you're either in trouble or you can go safely by.
Yeah. There's an application I think it's pretty cool. It's when you lose your phone. There's I forget the name of the application, but it locates it for you. It's iPhone Locator.
Mobile Me.
Yeah, Mobile Me. That's one of them. Yeah, it's kind of cool because there've been cases where people have stolen devices, and then there's a knock on their door, and they've activated Mobile Me, and they've located through GPS technology that device and arrest the people with the phones. And so, it's also good for people like myself who can't find it.
And you go on the computer system, where did I put my phone? Love that.
Exactly.
Well, Terry, we could talk for, I'm sure, another hour. We're coming towards the end of the show. Before we depart, we have a tradition on our show to ask all of our guests, what is your CFO tip of the month? What is yours?
I think the tip of the month for me would be the absence of competition. Lorraine, there is no real economic value. And I think there are a lot of pressures today for a CFO to do things the easy way, to not do competitive bids, to not, you know, to believe that the provider of the service, or whoever it is going to give them the absolute best deal through partnering, or, you know, however they you know, articulate their position. And a lot of times, because of reduced sources, you don't have much time. There's a time issue. You got crunches going on. You got a lot of things going on. This might not be the highest priority. But just be aware that if you don't do the competitive route, if you don't compete for those services, you will not get the best deal.
Well, that's a great tip. Thank you. And thank you formally, Terry, for being our guest on today's radio show and sharing your innermost thoughts on helping the CFO reduce telecom costs.
You're welcome. I'm happy to have been here. Thank you, Lorraine.
Well, thanks also go to our contributor for the news article, chiefexecutive.net, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs, controllers, and consultants to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to DelaneyLLC.com. And thanks to National Association of Corporate Directors, Advancing Exemplary Board Leadership, for directors by directors. Their website is nacdonline.org. Well, this and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or you know of another CFO that perhaps would be like to be a guest on the show, we'd like to hear from you. Please contact us via the web, or you can send us an email at info@cforadio.com. Thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.